I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. That way Lumberg can't see me. And after that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Nothing I want to do more than just space out for about an hour.
I'd like to have a little informal right chat with you, okay?
But we got to do this, people. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast.
Okay.
Oh, boy. Episode 74.
Woo!
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Aaron Rogan.
Nobody beats me in the kitchen.
Of course, this is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight to your ear holes. Welcome, everybody. I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I know I did. It was good. It was good. My favorite uncle wasn't there, and he's usually the guy that brings all the liquor, so kind of missed out on that.
No, Kelly Clarkson!
What else happened? Ate way too much, of course. See, it happens every year, and this happens probably to everybody. Because if you got, you know, the holidays come around, and you've got 40 things to do in a span of like 4 or 5 days, right? You got to go see the grandparents. You got to go to the Thanksgiving dinner with the other set of grandparents if you still have them around. Then you gotta see all the family, right? You gotta see your significant other's family, that side of the family. You're cramming everything in, and that's what we've been doing, and it has not stopped. And now with a baby, it makes things a little bit crazier, you know. I'm feeling a little bit under the weather today. I think it's from all the running around. My body has shut down. Well, okay. It's not from all the running around, because I haven't really been doing any running. It's more like driving a vehicle. My body is worn out. It's eaten way too much in the last 4 days. This is what's going on with me now, is that every year I'm setting the bar higher. No, I'm setting the bar lower where my weight is concerned. Because I know that after, I haven't weighed myself yet today, but man, I know that when I like weigh myself tomorrow or something like that, I'm going to be starting all over from this new high, where I've never been this heavy in my life. And I wish the holidays would just go away, because you know what? No, it's not the holidays' fault. It's mine. I confess, it's my willpower. Boy, this is really interesting, isn't it? I'm sure this is what you guys all wanted to hear me talk about today. welcome to the show, everybody. We got a great show for you. Kyle Zantos, a man by the name of Kyle Zantos, is going to be joining me here in Dining Room Studios shortly. He's a local Seattle musician here, and has worked with a number of different projects. And I think the current one that he's in right now is this band called Brian John Appleby, which is very, very good. And so we'll be featuring music by Brian John Appleby throughout the show today, throughout the episode, episode 74. Man, just keeps on, that number just keeps on getting bigger and bigger. It's pretty impressive. I'm impressed with myself that I'm sticking with it, and impressed with you, the listener, for doing that as well. Anyway, Kyle Zantos, he'll be joining us here shortly. He's also got a great podcast that you guys should all check out. It's called Musician on Musicians, just a bare bones conversation with some really interesting people. He's had Sarah Cahoon. Damian Gerardo, Michael Parker from Pickwick, who we've had on this show, John Russell from The Head and the Heart, and just a bunch of good stuff over there. So check that out, Musician on Musicians. That's just musicianonmusicians.com. So check uh, check out that podcast, and he'll be joining us here in just a moment. You know, winter is here, everybody. Winter is here, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff to do around the house, namely when the leaves start dropping. You know, you got to go out and pick those up. Well, that's been happening over here at Dining Room Studios here in the beautiful Greenwood neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. And, yeah, we've got a number of trees out, you know, in front of our building. And we're a small outfit here, small outfit in the building that we live in. There's only four units here, and they're all, you know, they're all owned by us and everything. And, yeah, so we have the duties of going and cleaning up and doing the landscaping around the building and everything like that. But it has not stopped raining for, I don't know, it seems like a while. It probably hasn't been that long, but it seems like it has been. But, okay, so here's what goes on in my mind. The leaves out there have all fallen off the tree. The trees are all bare now. And the leaves are turning into just this mucky mess because it's a heavily trafficked area. There's a lot of parking out on the street and everything like that, you know, so people are always just pulling in. And I keep on saying to myself, I got to get down there. I got to clean up those leaves. It's starting to become a mess. But it keeps on raining. I don't want to go out there in the rain. I mean, those leaves are going to be really heavy when they're soaking wet, right? I do have a method to my madness. I got to wait until I get a couple days of dry to go and do that. Well, we did have a dry day just the other day, and I told myself, okay, if it's dry tomorrow, that's what I'm going to do it. And it rained, so I didn't get out there. And these leaves are just taunting me. Every time I look outside, they're just screaming at me, come down here and pick me up, because I'm definitely going to be the only one in the building that goes down there and does this, because I'm the only one every year to go and do that shit and clean up around the building and stuff. Fuck. I'm such a sucker, man. I'm such a frickin' sucker. Anyway, let's get going here, shall we? Here's what I should do. I should just go over to the neighbors and be like, "Hey, let's organize a cleaning party, and let's get down there and let's get dirty, and let's do this. Let's clean this up." Everybody, you can't say no to that, right? Or what'll happen is that they just won't come to their door. We've got two people like that in the building, and they don't do anything. They always want me to do it for them. They always want somebody else to do it for them. And I'm getting a little tired of it. I'm getting a little tired of it. I mean, I am the guy that has to go down there when people forget to bring their garbage cans out or the recycling. I'm that neighbor that grabs their cans for them and brings them out there. I'm getting fed up. I need to live in my own space. We need to have our own house. But there's no way in hell we're selling this place now. So, yeah. Boy, this is good. This is good podcast. This is good fake radio, isn't it, folks? A little bit depressing, and a lot complainy. Anyway, hey, good stuff coming up to Seattle, and we need to reiterate this. I know I told you guys about this in the last episode, but it's still coming up, and there are tickets available for Dana Gould coming to Laugh Hole. Put on by the People's Republic of Comedy. Yeah, Dana Gould, December 7th with Kathy Sorbo and Tristan Devon, two very funny people. Also, Dana Gould, you may recognize that name from Seinfeld, and as a writer for The Simpsons, and also just a awesome stand-up comedian. Well, he is coming to Seattle. He's going to be playing the Laugh Hole there. I believe that's at Chop Suey, December 7th, 9 p.m., $10 pre-sale, $15 at the door. So get your tickets now, because this is definitely going to sell out. You want to see this guy. You want to see this guy. Also, another thing put on by the People's Republic of Comedy is the Plan 9 from Outer Space, December 8th, the next day, with Dana Gould, Frank Conniff, and Trace Ballou. I think that's how you say that name. But this is part of the SIFF Cinema And it's kind of like a, this is like the Mystery Science Theater 3000 thing. So you want to see that too, right? Oh man, that's going to be good. That is going to be awesome. And you know what? I don't know where this is at. I have no idea. I think it might be at the Neptune. But anyway, December 7th or December 8th, 7 p.m. for that one. Yeah, get on board on that. December 7th, see some great stand-up, Laugh Hole, Dana Gould. He will be on this show that week as well. So, yeah, get your tickets. Hey, let's go to our first musical break here. Boy, it feels, man, I feel like I'm just moving really slow. I feel like I'm moving very, very slow. So I apologize for that. We're going to pick things up here with some Brian John Appleby. Let's see. This is off their latest album, Fire on the Vine. This song is called The Rider, The Horse, The Land. And we will be right back with Mr. Kyle Zantos, musician extraordinaire and now a podcast guru. He'll be right here in Dining Room Studios. So this is The Rider, The Horse, The Land. And we will be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay tuned. And the land. All right, well, welcome back to the Dining Room Studios, the Air Raid Podcast. Joining me here in Dining Room Studios in the beautiful, rainy, gross Greenwood neighborhood of North Seattle is Kyle Zantos.
Hi, Aaron.
How you doing, buddy?
Good, man.
Good. Well, I'm so glad that you could join me this weekend.
Thanks for having me.
On the cusp of Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
Black Friday.
Yeah.
Did you do any shopping, sir?
Oh, no.
No?
No.
You stay away from that, huh?
Yeah. I get like anxiety in malls and stuff.
Me too.
It freaks me out.
Yeah.
So, no, I stayed very far away from that.
I was thinking that things this year, since like the economy is so bad, you know, that things were going to kind of like, it was going to be like an even creep for the Black Friday shopping.
Yeah.
However, we were hanging out with some people last night that had heard a story. I don't know where it was, but it's got to be like somewhere in the Midwest. But there was some woman had brought pepper spray with her to the front of the line of the Best Buy and pepper sprayed a bunch of people
No
to
way.
get to the one of three, like, the big screen TVs that they had.
Oh,
in
my
there
God.
For, like, $300, yeah.
Where did she think that that was going to end up? That she wasn't going to get in trouble for that?
Who the fuck knows? I think she just watching the news, you know, and seeing all the cops pepper spraying protesters and stuff.
Just
as of late,
was
you know,
inspired.
She was inspired. she was like, you know, this could really work out in my favor.
Yeah,
and she just went for it.
Not so,
so
much.
So good for her. Wow. Maybe she got arrested. I don't know.
I can't.
Hopefully she still got that TV.
Then it's all worth it.
right.
Pepper spray a few innocent pedestrians and get your big screen TV.
That's right. Married. My wife. She goes every year. She does the Black Friday shopping and she gets new pillows. Mm-hmm. Which is huge. That's huge for us.
You get new pillows every year?
New pillows every year.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. There's good sales on
that. That's an interesting family tradition. What do you do with the old ones?
We burn them.
Ceremonial burning every year.
We burn them with the tires and the diapers in the back.
Going green.
That's right. Yeah. Reduce, reuse, recycle, my friend. It's heat. Well, welcome to the show, Kyle. And and you've got your own show going on right now.
I do.
Musician on Musicians.
Correct.
I'm enjoying the shit out of it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's young still.
Yeah. And so how many episodes do you got right now?
I think I've done I want to say 5.
Okay.
I think I have 5 up right now. I have one in the can, as they say.
Right. You're gonna have to start learning the fake radio.
All the hip lingo. I've got one in the can there that I'm gonna wait on because I did John from the Head and the Heart, and Josiah also that same day because they're seldomly in town, and so
okay.
I was able to find time, so I just knocked them both out, but
yeah,
I figured I should space them out because it might be less impactful if you just have two guys from the same. I mean, they have different opinions and different thoughts and everything, but you know, just to vary it up a little bit.
Yeah. And you've had Sarah Cahoon,
mm-hmm.
Which was the latest one that's up there right now, which is a really good episode.
Thank you.
And Damian Jurado, Michael mm-hmm. Parker from Pickwick, who's mm-hmm. been on this show.
Yeah.
And who else? Am I missing someone?
Damian, Michael, John Russell from The Head and the Heart, which you said, Sarah Cahoon.
And then you're one.
And Jesse Sykes.
Jesse Sykes,
that's
the last
one.
Yeah. Well, excellent. So, I mean, that's a pretty good, those are all pretty good gets.
Yeah. I've been fortunate enough that in my short time here to get to know people that have been around Seattle for a while. And, Damian and Jesse, and then more newcomers like Head and the Heart, become friends with all of them and be able to get them in my fledgling podcast, my young little podcast. It's been really cool. I've enjoyed. It's really cool to be able to do something like that where I just love doing that anyway and do that anyway. In general. And so I mean, that was where the idea for the podcast came from, is I just kind of thought, like,
You're having these conversations with your friends in the music community anyway. Why not record it, because it's super interesting?
And there was definitely a thought that I had going into it, like, I know that I'm a nerd and that not everybody likes to get, like, philosophical about music or hear people get philosophical about it.
Right.
But I kind of figured I'll do it because I like doing it, and I know my friends would probably enjoy something like that, and we'll see if other folks enjoy it. it got a decent amount of response from folks that weren't necessarily in the music community or musicians, even just people that enjoyed music. And I think that there is my justification, or I guess what I thought, that if you weren't like a musician or really nerdy about music, you would at least come to it because you're a fan of that particular person and enjoy getting a pretty intimate conversation with that person. And the goal is hopefully you like that, and then you look on there, and maybe you see one other person that you're a fan of or something that
that
one. And then once you, my goal is to get them to trust me so that they see, and, you know, they see one that I come out with weeks later, and they don't know who it is, but they are like, well, the three I listened to before were interesting.
Right.
Hopefully this one will be interesting. So.
Yeah. Well, you'll start to find, too, as you go on further, and that's what happened with what has been happening with this show as well, where we've been getting listeners, is that people are coming back, you know, not necessarily because they know who the guest is,
right,
but they're coming back because they enjoy the conversation that mm-hmm. the host has.
Right.
And so that's kind of the ultimate goal, right, is like to, you know,
definitely,
to have people enjoy what, you know, what you bring to the table.
Yeah, yeah, so. To trust that I'll somehow make it interesting, even if it's,
right,
if it's with
right.
somebody they don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, which is also a bad thing, too, because it makes, like, for me, for instance, it makes me very comfortable.
Mm.
Like, I do an intro to this show before the guest comes on.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, anywhere from like 10 to 13 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes or so.
Sure.
And it's just me complaining about shit. So now I've gotten to the point where I'm comfortable knowing that these people are going to come back
right.
week after week. Now I can just complain to them because I need somebody to complain to.
Yeah.
So I apologize to all of you listening to this that had to go through that first 13 minutes of me complaining about all the leaves that are down in front of my building right now. But yeah, you have a very interesting show. We found out about it from another listener in Wisconsin, and that's all we're going to say about that. But yeah, I really enjoy it, and I enjoy hearing you and what you bring to the table.
Thanks,
so
man.
Just letting you know.
Thank you.
I'm going to listen
that's
to
nice
the next
to hear.
One. I'm going to listen to the next one regardless of who you have on.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So you are, we were talking about this a little bit out back.
Mm-hmm.
You are a transplant
yes.
from Southern California.
Correct.
Where in California do you hail from, sir?
Well, I grew up in Orange County, which I dislike very much. And I
you don't like motorcycles?
Raised trucks, the beach.
So you moved to Washington.
Yeah, I moved
where,
to the
where
the
there
antithesis.
Are more raised trucks.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I wasn't a fan of that area. Mm-hmm. But I grew up there, and I eventually moved to Long Beach, which is a city in Los Angeles County.
Right, right.
And has got its own thing, you know. Snoop Dogg's from there, and
that's what made you move there.
Yeah, well, primarily, I was hoping to run into to Snoop at Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles, which never came to fruition, unfortunately. But,
oh, sorry.
Yeah, it was kind of a bust. No, it was a cool place to live, and I got to play some cool music and had a good time. But it also it's small, and
yeah.
my options felt thin, you know. Fairly quickly after a couple years, and
yeah.
so I.
Now, are you talking like options, as in like musical?
Yeah,
musical ventures.
Yeah,
down there.
Yeah, I just kind of I felt like where I was just going to kind of stay there, and I wasn't mm-hmm. moving forward really. I was just playing. I was playing banjo and you know doing some cool stuff, but it just didn't feel like it was really going
right.
the direction that I wanted to go. So I started. Kind of thinking of like, okay, where else do you move for music? Like, where is that? Where can I move and help that along? And, you know, I thought about Nashville, Chicago, New York,
uh-huh.
Seattle, Portland. And during that time, I knew Josiah from the Head and the Heart. We were in our first bands together way back when in Southern mm-hmm. California. And he had moved up here and had started that band and stuff. And so I came and visited him for 5 days. And moved up a month and a half later.
Okay,
yeah.
cool.
So it was a pretty quick decision.
Yeah, yeah. He was like, yeah, it's great up here.
Right, yeah. Then I came up here, checked it out. I enjoyed myself, and I was just like, fuck it. Yeah, just move up there.
Yeah, why not?
See how
right?
it goes.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So what was it? What was the deciding factor to make you decide on Seattle? I mean, you know... did you come up here and go see some shows or something and check out the music scene? Or?
I think I did see a show. I think I went to The Round. Are you familiar with that?
No.
It's an event that the Fremont Abbey puts on.
Oh, okay.
And,
yeah.
And it's poetry, live painting, and music. And they have like three individual artists, musical artists. And they do a song each, and while all this is going on, there's a couple of painters that are painting throughout the show.
Right.
And then
right.
there's slam poetry, normally spoken word kind of stuff, after the three songs, and then hence the round.
It just right, keeps, right, yeah.
yeah. rotating. And it's really cool. And I think, so I saw that, hung out with Josiah and his band the whole time, and it was really fun getting to know them and, you know, playing music with them, jamming and stuff. And I like the city a lot. I love that, you know, back in Southern California, to really get in nature, like other than the beach, but I mean like tree nature.
Right.
You had to go somewhere, right? Uh-huh. You had to like, you went somewhere in order to get in that. Whereas here, it's everywhere, you know, yeah, in all yeah. the neighborhoods are tons of trees and it's super lush. And I just like the vibe of the city a lot, both the way that it looks and just the way that it felt. And I met other people that played music and everybody was super friendly. And I prior to coming up, like looked on the internet, like, I looked on Sound of the Sound cause Josiah uh-huh. was like, hey, this will give you like kind of an idea of some of the music that's happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I saw stuff and I was like, man, I don't see stuff like that down here in California. And this is all pretty interesting. And there's a lot of talent up there and stuff that I,
and plus so while you're in California, you're playing banjo.
Mm-hmm.
Was banjo big down there? I don't see. Yeah.
Yes. And well, no, I mean, not big.
I can't see in being in Southern California or Long Beach and have, because when I think like Long Beach, I think of like people who are really into Sublime. And we do have listeners down there, and you know, I'm not. This is an overgeneralization of.
It's also what slightly that outdated.
Like. Very outdated. Very
it's,
outdated.
It's not. It's actually Long Beach. There's North Long Beach, and then there's the rest of Long Beach. North Long Beach is still got a decent amount of crime and is maybe more towards that Sublime group of people firmly or
stuck
something.
Firmly stuck in 1999.
Yeah, just constantly Sublime and Snoop Dogg on repeat. but then like the rest of Long Beach are kind of more downtown, and then there's an area called Belmont Heights. And that's where I lived, and it's pretty hip actually. There's like a lot of some good music and really cool like shops, and definitely has much more of the neighborhood feel than a lot of areas in Southern California. So it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay. Touché.
But the banjo was, I mean, if you play that kind of music, you just kind of end up finding it's small, but they're around. So you just kind of keep getting to know those people, you know, and then people ask you to play and so on and so forth. So no, it wasn't big, but I was busy. I played in two bands and did all that. So
yeah. And you're a man, you're a man of very, of many musical talents as well.
Thank you.
Like you play guitar, right? Mm-hmm. Banjo.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some pictures of, I believe it was up at,
Dobe?
Yeah, Dobe, mm-hmm. where you're playing some, what's that?
Harmonium.
A harmonium, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah.
So you play a lot of, a big range
True.
Of stringed instruments.
Yes.
And
non, yeah, non-string, reeded.
Reeded instruments, yeah. 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 So how did you get, was your upbringing very musical?
Not at all.
No?
Actually, it's weird that I play music for a few reasons. One is that I was brought up on 80s contemporary Christian praise music and
very good
and Kenny G. That was literally what I was brought up with, and then as I got into junior high, like, you know, get the Christian like rock bands and stuff, the stuff that was like, you know, we're singing about Jesus, but we're hip. We play, you know, we play rock music and
right,
stuff.
Right, right.
So I came up with a pretty narrow, you know, my parents didn't even show me the Beatles or anything like that.
So your parents were pretty
pretty conservative.
Devout.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And so there nobody in my family is musical. Even in my extended family, like my grandpa played he sang in choirs, and I feel like he played trumpet too, but I never heard him sing really or do anything. And nobody else played, and I just my parents had my brother and I do piano lessons when when I was like 12 and did it for like 2 years. But
did you enjoy it or was it forced?
It was forced. I mean, there were parts that I enjoyed. I liked finding things I wanted to learn and then learning them. But my practice ethic was terrible. Like I just wanted to play what I wanted to play. So I didn't excel in theory and I was bad with reading music too, because I would, especially if I knew the song, my mind would know where it was going, and
right.
I could kind of transfer that to my hands, so I wouldn't read. And my teacher could tell. She's like, "You didn't read that. You just knew that that was coming and played it." Like, so yeah. I was bad, and then I made my mom stop making me go to piano, and I didn't play anything, and you know, whatever, for a couple of years, and then a buddy came over and brought his guitar, and my mom, it's such a classic like parent moment, and 9 times out of 10 is super lame, but there's the one time out of 10. So
yeah,
so she goes, "Hey, why don't you get out my old guitar from college," which she never learned to play.
Right. Did you even know that it existed?
No.
Because I would have been kind of pissed that my mom kept that from me for so long.
Well, but it
wasn't...
I didn't even know that I wanted to play music.
Oh, okay. You know? So this was before you really...
Oh, yeah. This is post, you know, stopping piano. And I just, I liked music, but I didn't think about playing it, really. And then she's like, "Why don't you have Matt teach you a couple songs?" And it was one of those things where it's like the same thing as, like, you know, they come over and just like, "Why don't you guys do a puzzle together?" And it's like, "Shut up, Mom. That's lame. We want to play Mario Kart." You know, it was like totally one of those moments, except that it was a good idea. And I was just kind of like, I guess that might be kind of cool. So he taught me 3 little licks, and then I just taught myself everything from there, basically.
Right, right. So do you know how to read music now?
Oh, hell to the no.
Yeah.
No way.
See, that always like when I was, I went to guitar lessons for a couple years in my teens, and that subject would always get broached.
Yeah.
You know, where they were, the teacher would like, "Okay, well, we need to sit down and learn how to, or teach you how to read this kind of stuff."
Right.
You know, and, I don't know whether it was like ADD or just like that stuff would bore the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah.
All I wanted to do was learn how to play, you know, Waterfall by Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
And like, you know, that's my goal.
Yeah.
You know? And, but I think it's kind of come back and bit me in the butt, because now, like when I go and am trying to like formulate a song or something like that, I always kind of get stuck in the same, I want to, for lack of a better term, genre.
Right.
You know, genre of music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does that happen to you sometimes too?
Oh, like, sure.
I mean, you're probably a much better musician than I am, but
well, yeah, it's even if it's not.
Yeah,
a
you
genre,
are a better musician.
No, sorry. I can neither confirm nor deny that claim. It does happen where even if it's not getting stuck in a genre, you get stuck to your things, like
your
tendencies and stuff, and that. Yeah, that definitely happens. And so what I try to do when I do feel like that is the case, I try to learn, I try to learn something that isn't necessarily like right in my wheelhouse, or something that I do really like, but I never play like that. So maybe I like playing blues, but I don't play like Jimi Hendrix.
Uh-huh.
So I'll sometimes be like, I'm going to try to learn some Hendrix songs, so that I'm going to have those, like, you just like, you know, there's certain licks in there and certain ways that you play that once you learn that, it'll occur to you when you're writing or when you're playing leads over somebody else's songs.
Right, yeah.
That like formation, or like, oh, I remember like that kind of lick from that Hendrix song was bitching. Like, I'll try throwing in something like that. And sometimes it's not even that conscious. You just like do it.
You just
like,
do it.
Oh,
anyway.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
That's a new flavor. So you do, it's really easy just human nature to be stuck in like what you normally do, like it's worked in the past and it's not even conscious, you just play and it ends up coming out of you.
Yeah.
So the key in my mind is it's kind of like if you're a painter and you have your palette and you have, you know, your colors on it, and say you early on you got friendly with red and yellow and blue and green, right? And that's about, and you just keep, it's the same, you keep painting new paintings, but it's only with those colors. And so to me, the key to not being stuck is adding new colors to that. And okay, right, now right. I have brown and now I have fuchsia. And so inherently, because you have those colors to work with, what you're painting is going to be flavored differently and feel differently. So it's, you have to, and you really do have to make a conscious effort in my mind
to change it up a little bit.
Yeah. And yeah, to add those
you're
colors. Just,
yeah. You're going to be using the same colors.
Yeah.
To over keep and with over your analogy. Again. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, hey, this is a good spot to take our second musical break.
Groovy.
We're going to hear, we're featuring music by Brian John Appleby throughout the episode, which Kyle is a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And now you inform me that the Fire on the Vine is the first full length.
Yes, correct.
That is available. And you can find this on brianjohnappleby.bandcamp.com. Very, very good stuff. This song is The Words of the Revelator. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast with Mr. Kyle Zantos. More to come. So stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute. They fall heavy like a hammer on my mind. You are the light in the darkness. You're the fire on the vine. Oh, my son. I have known your way, but I'm the gale that'll rattle your gate. You shudder, I make you shake. You will find what you did not see. A road less narrow, a way not steep. And oh my child, don't you lose your remember my table, remember my face, and the things I told you in the middle of the night. We are back. That was The Words of the Revelator by Brian John Appleby, of which our guest here today, Kyle Zantos, plays what? Guitar?
No guitar with Brian.
Oh, no.
No, that's only with Damien.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But with Brian, I play harmonium, banjo, lap steel, and keys.
Jesus, man.
There's a lot of switching around that goes on during our show.
Yeah. I've always envied people like you who can just like it was it because before we went to the break we were talking about how you kind of started playing music.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom put you in piano lessons, and then right. a couple years later it was like, oh hey, I have this guitar in the attic,
yeah,
and you can mess around on this now,
right?
So what was it when you picked up that guitar for the first time, learned a couple of these licks that mm-hmm. your friend Matt mm-hmm. taught to you?
Mm-hmm.
Was it just like a fire starting in your brain at that point, or what? Because you play a whole range of different instruments here.
I think it did kind of click. I don't think I knew at the time. It's hard to remember exactly what I felt. I don't think I knew, like, as soon as I learned those, like, oh, this is now what I do.
It
wasn't that, but I did really enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just kind of kept going. It wasn't for a couple, I mean...
It was like a snowball on a very shallow slope.
Exactly. So it was. I knew I really liked it, and I, you know, as I got a little bit better, started playing with my friends, and then I was like, okay, I want to play in a band. I want to play shows, and then, you know, as time goes on a little bit, like I want to go on tour, and you know, just all the things associated with it, and right, I started dreaming, and. It was a slow start, though. I mean, I didn't play shows for a while, and then I finally started. Once I got into, like, a band, which was my first band was with Josiah from The Head and the Heart.
Mm-hmm. What was that band called?
It was called Bambi.
Bambi?
Yeah. Yeah, it was really
all good. Disney covers?
Yeah. It was death metal covers of specifically Disney princess songs.
Nice. Actually,
yeah. It was
very good.
Shockingly, it wasn't very successful. Yeah.
Cinderella was already taken, so you couldn't use
We weren't very successful. It was not that music actually, but it was bad.
Yeah.
It was.
I think the first incarnation of anyone's bands are usually pretty terrible.
Usually I have come across some youngsters in my day that were, you know, 17 or something. Maybe it wasn't their first band, it was like their second band.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're awesome.
Yeah.
And
they're already signed.
Yeah,
making millions.
Well, do you know Avi Buffalo? He's on Sub Pop, and
I've heard the name before. I don't know if I've actually heard it.
He's from Long Beach, and he, like, when I met him, I think he was 18, and he had played in a few groups and stuff,
yeah.
But, you know, he's 18 years old, and the guy shreds, super good guitar player, wrote really cool songs and stuff, and then by, like, 19, he was signed on Sub Pop, and I was just like, are you kidding? I was doing the shittiest music when I was 19, like you know, just lame stuff, and like, this guy's like really good, like talent wise and like writes good songs.
Right.
I was
like,
fuck you, man, you're so young. And then the other instance is not young but first band, Kenny from The Head and the Heart, the piano player, this is his first band.
Are you serious?
He has never played in a band before this.
Kenny, if you're listening to this, you're an asshole.
I know.
What the fuck, man?
I know, dude.
Does that ever get to you? Like, because it used to get to me. I mean, you know, I was never in like really good bands or anything like that. But I would play my heart off.
Yeah.
Or
out.
That heart out. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. and that would always kind of chide me a little bit. You know.
With him, it's different. His justification, which I've given him shit about it.
No, the guy's amazing. So yeah,
he's really good. But his thing was like, I could have been in bands back home. Like there were plenty of opportunities when he was from LA, and he said like, I didn't want to. Like I wasn't going to play in a band just for like the experience.
Being in a band.
Like, I am going to wait until I find people that I really want to play with.
And so
during that time, there's just years and years of him playing piano by himself in his room and getting really good. So it's on one hand, it's like, fuck you. But also that like restraint that's just like, I'm not going to play until I believe in it
is
pretty cool.
But that's hard to find, though.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
like one in a million. That's luck right there.
And also, it's interesting that he was able to jump into a band setting and do it well, because not having that experience of like playing with other people, you know, because music isn't just about how good you are technically. You got to have feel and taste and all that stuff.
Well, some of the best bands out there aren't technically very good.
Right.
Like, they're, you know, easiest one to pluck from the tree right now is Sex Pistols.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they were not technically good at all. Sid Vicious was one of the worst bass players ever. You know, but still, it worked.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
Yeah.
And that kind of music, you know, is a lot, the emphasis is a lot on attitude.
Right.
And
that's, you know, yeah, totally. Well, let's pick a different one then. Velvet Underground.
Mm-hmm.
I would not say that Lou Reed, especially back then, was a very good guitar player.
Sure.
Nor is he a very good singer. We talked about this a little bit in episode 73 because Mr. Lou Reed has teamed up with Metallica.
Has he really?
Yeah.
Yikes.
It's so bad. It's so bad. But anyway, that's kind of beside the fact. But, you know, I wouldn't say that on his own back then he would have been good at all. But with that band that they put together, they were fucking amazing.
Yeah, it was the right.
They made some really good stuff.
It was the right chemistry.
And there was enough heroin involved to, like,
that too.
Make everything just kind of congeal together.
Yeah.
Work together.
Yeah. Probably should do heroin. You're right.
Should we just start heroin and start a heroin band?
That was what I was getting from what you were just saying. I thought that was the point you're trying to get across.
All the kids listening out there, start heroin.
And then start a band and you'll be super successful.
Yeah, you will be awesome.
Guaranteed.
If you can keep the band going while you're
right.
While
that's
you're
the
high.
Only trick.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. So let's kind of switch gears here. You mentioned touring a little while ago. That is one thing that I always wished that I had done while in a band, because it just sounds like so much fun.
Yeah.
So what are your experiences? When was the first tour you went on?
My first tour, actually haven't been touring for very long at all. It just started happening. My first tour was with a dude named Matt Costa. He's from Southern California. And I was actually telling you this earlier.
Very good,
I moved up to Seattle in October of 2010. And I was here for a week. And then I got thrown onto a tour playing banjo with him for 6 weeks.
Now, did you know somebody? Or
I knew
that get set up?
He had a new backing band that was a band before. And so he grabbed the whole band and made them his backing band for that record that he did.
Gotcha.
So I was buds with them. And it came up very strangely. And it's a long story. I won't get into it. But I knew them. And right before I left, I met Matt. And then we started talking about music and had a lot of common interests and stuff that we liked. And he found out I played banjo and he liked banjo. And
yeah.
And then we ended up jamming a little bit. And then it basically was, we got along and like I said, I was buds with his band and they were like, hey, he's going to be in the Northwest by the time we're going to do the national tour.
Cool.
And he's like, cool. Do you want to, plan a couple songs or something? I was like, yeah, that would be awesome. And so then once we actually got some songs down, he's like, well, why don't you do the Northwest shows? So it'll be Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, and Victoria in BC. And I was great. Yeah, that'd be awesome. So I learned 5 or 6 songs or something and then did those shows. And then the night, Seattle was actually the last one of those 4 days. And so the night before we got back to Seattle, Matt, we went to a bar after the show and stuff. And he's like, would you be able to do the rest of the tour? And I was like, the whole thing? And he's like, yeah. Like,
this was U.S. tour?
Yeah, it was a U.S. tour. We did 4 Canada dates total, but just a generally national tour.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So my first tour experience was in a tour bus and roaming.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're getting back into you fucker.
Yes, absolutely. Without a shadow of a doubt.
Right.
Yeah, I was spoiled.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's insane.
My first tour.
Did you love it?
Oh, I really did.
Yeah.
Touring is so interesting. You get really, especially in this format, what was cool is that the bus would always go overnight. So you'd sleep while you were traveling. So that's the good side. So theoretically you get more time in the city.
Yeah.
But you actually, when you're playing as the headliner, your sound checks and load-ins are at 3-4 o'clock.
Yeah.
So it's like you get there, and you wake up at 10 or something. And then the other downside is that once the bus is parked.
Wait, waking up at 10 is a downside?
No. Okay. Sorry. The downside is that once the bus is parked.
Yeah.
That's where the bus is staying. So if you want to get anywhere,
your
options are walking distance or cab. Uh-huh. And, cabs get pricey and stuff. And, it's not, you can't just run around going everywhere in cabs and stuff. So it was like, morning, everybody get out your iPhone, look on Yelp, look at where we're going to eat, and then look for record stores, thrift stores, vintage stores, and instrument stores.
Yeah.
See any of those that are... And it was so funny. Matt pointed it out after like a couple weeks that the way that if anybody asked how far it was, it became the iPhone. So it was, how far is it? 0.6 miles. And that was how we gauged the distance of everything. Because, you know, you're in a city, especially if you have a car, it's like, how far is it? 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, but this was, and that's... And, because it was...
Depends on how long you want to walk.
Well, right. And so when you're out for 5 or 6 weeks and this is your mode of transportation, you totally know what 0.6 miles feels like.
Right.
And and the difference between that and 1.1 miles. You know, like you can totally feel the difference between that. So, you know, sometimes somebody... Oh, there's this instrument store. Does it look cool? Yeah, it looks pretty cool. How far is it? It's mile and 1.3 miles. Like, oh, no.
Yeah, no, that's not happening.
Not today. No.
That's not happening.
Yeah. It was...
There'll be a better one in Chicago.
Right, exactly. But it was a great experience. I've toured a little bit since then with Brian and stuff, and have another tour with Brian coming up in January, and then I'm going to Europe in March, the whole month of March, actually, with Damian Jurado
in
Europe, which is going to be amazing.
I'm
super excited about that.
Yeah.
So touring is not as glamorous as you conceptualize it to be.
Right. Obviously. It's no longer like Guns N' Roses.
No.
Zeppelin.
Zeppelin was wild on their tours. It's not that. It's not glamorous. Like it is. It's a job. You know.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
You're loading in at 3. Setting everything up, doing your sound checks, and then you're just like hanging out and you're tired and now these things were alleviated by having a bus where you could go back into your bunk and take a nap and stuff like that.
And sleep on an actual bed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So it's definitely, I'm not complaining. Like I did get the best, the best treatment that
I
could.
Please don't.
No, I'm not in the slightest. But it's not glamorous. At times it is, and the higher up you get, it gets more quote unquote glamorous. But it's time away from home and away from your comfort zone and all that stuff. But
yeah,
but it's so interesting getting the snapshots of all these different cities and the different feels of each places
that
you go. And
yeah,
it's, man, playing music every night is awesome. It's so rad, and it totally, you know, the we're good buds with the Head and the Heart guys, and they've had a unbelievably rigorous tour schedule for the last year or so. So they, you know, their perspective is a lot different. Like they like it, but it's a lot. They've really been putting.
Well, it can definitely start to drain you after.
Yeah,
a while,
exactly.
I would imagine.
Yeah,
I'm not speaking from experience here.
Yeah. No, it does. It is draining. Yeah. It definitely takes something out of you. You're in front of a crowd every night, and you're selling the music to them and trying to get them into it and make sure they have a good time and that you play well and you hit your marks and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So on one hand, it's the best ever. And on the other hand, it totally takes something out of you,
but it is
great. I really, in my limited experience thus far, I enjoy the shit out of it.
Yeah. So what size shows were you playing with Matt Costa?
It wasn't crazy. It was, in general, I would say, 300 to 600.
That's pretty good for a first tour to go on too.
Oh, I mean, for me? Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. That's insane.
I never played before that. I think I'd maybe played a show where I played to like 200 or 300 or something. And that was the high mark. That was the top.
Yeah, totally.
So
totally.
Yeah, this was a crazy thing to be thrown into.
Yeah.
And so
what was that like for you? What was that experience like? Getting up in front of about 600 people. Was it just totally nerve-wracking for you, or what?
No, strangely.
Really?
The first couple shows were intimidating because I got, like, no rehearsal time. Mm. So I like, figured out kind of some outlines of a few songs with Matt before they left and before I left.
Yeah.
And then other songs, he gave me the tracks, and I just made stuff up at home.
Right.
And then, like, literally, the first date we played was to Doug Fir in Portland. And the first one I played with them, rather. And it was literally, rehearsal was me going on the bus with Matt, showing him what I had for these 6 songs. And we changed a little bit, but it was mostly that. And, like, all right, let's play a show now. It's like,
yeah,
I haven't like played with the band, you know? And so that was nerve wracking because it was super fresh. I'd only been rehearsing the songs on my own for a week and a half, 2 weeks, I guess. Yeah. And
you kind of wrote your own parts to it too.
Right,
so it was
exactly.
kind of loose.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that was nerve wracking, but honestly, it's really weird. It's good and bad. It's good for not, you know, being able to be comfortable on stage, but it also, I've noticed that because it doesn't faze me that much, I get more jaded. And so I don't realize like in the moment, like we played, the Neptune with Brian John Appleby. We opened for, Hey Marseille, and it was sold out, and it was, and by the time we played, like it was completely packed and you know, 850 people or something like that. And it just, it didn't, like I saw it and I was like, oh, that's rad. And like, that was it, you know, like in the moment, like, you know, the thunderous like applause of 850 people, like didn't faze me that much. I was just like, yeah, cool. But I'm just, you know, focused and like kind of doing my thing.
Right.
And it's almost like, it's like after the show, I'll kind of then remember those moments and be like, oh wow, that was actually a really crazy response. Like that was loud.
Yeah.
People were digging it. Like you kind of process it after, but I have to consciously do
I think, that's a good sign because it means you're not an egomaniacal bastard.
Not yet.
You know? Yeah, not yet.
Not yet.
Let's give it a couple years.
Give me a few years. I'll...
Once the podcast starts taking off,
then I'll get to that asshole level. It is good for that, but it's also like I feel like I have consciously tried to make myself like, hey, remember how crazy you would go at 16 if somebody told you that at 24, or I'm just now 25, that you're going to be playing in front of 800 people sometimes, like that's insane, and go on tour. All I wanted was to go on tour,
right,
you know. And so, and I get jaded really easily, maybe not jaded, but used to my surroundings. So there were times that me and my buddies in Costa's band, after a few weeks, you just get used to it, and you don't realize
phase you.
Holy shit, I'm in a tour bus, and I'm playing to 300 to 600 people.
Well, after
every night.
A couple weeks, it becomes that job kind of motion to you.
Yeah,
you
know, and you're having a great time, and you're like, man, this is fun, but you're not fully appreciating, or I wasn't, because I adapt really quickly to my situation, so that was my reality.
Right.
And so there would be times where like we'd go to the green room, and on the rider was two bottles of whiskey, and sometimes there was only one. And that would happen. And I'd be like, man, fuck that. That is so annoying. Like, we have six people just in the band that all drink the whiskey. Like, this is going to be gone instantly. And I would talk about this with one of the other guys in particular named John. He's a good friend of mine. And we talked about it. And we would realize, like, we'd be like, do you realize that we just bitched about not having two bottles of whiskey instead of one in our green room? That is retarded. Like, how can you so quickly be like, oh my god, I can't believe I'm going on a 6-week tour with playing to hundreds of people every night in a bus to fucking one bottle of whiskey, dude.
What,
kidding
the
me
fuck?
Yeah,
no, I remember the first green room that I ever went in that actually had beer stocked, and it was like, it was Tall Boys of PBR.
Classic.
And I was just like, this is it, man. Yeah. We fucking did it.
You made it. I know.
We did it,
and
guys.
And then so quickly, you're just like, seriously? They only brought a 24-pack in here?
Right.
Come on.
The beer's gone.
Yeah.
Where's the beer?
Yeah.
Where's the beer?
Yeah, it's totally stupid. I constantly have to remind myself, like, just think about when you were 16.
You would
shit yourself just at this, getting what I've achieved thus far. So I have to remind myself to make sure that I don't get jaded and appreciate what I have been able to do.
Yeah. Well, that's a good spot to end things right there, Kyle.
Groovy.
With a little bit of a more, you know, little rainbow encompassing everything right there. So thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciated this talk that we had.
Aaron.
It was a lot of fun, and hopefully sometime in the future we can have you back on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
You got anything? Let's see. Let's pimp your wares here before we end things here.
The podcast is called Musician on Musicians, and it's musicianonmusicians.com. It's on iTunes, and you can also stream it or download it from the website. I've got some interesting guests coming up in the near future. I'll probably do them every 2 or 3 weeks generally. So there's some good stuff coming up there.
Yeah.
Playing with Brian John Appleby at the Seattle Folk Fest on December 10th and at Numo's on January 12th with Moto Pony.
Oh, nice. That's going to be a good show.
Yeah, and Tompton as well. And then playing February for our tour kickoff show, we're playing the January one is the tour kickoff show. But in February, we're opening for Damian Jurado's CD release show. And I'll also be playing, me and one of the guys from Brian's band will also be playing with Damian that night, doing a little double duty.
Wonderful, so, wonderful.
Yeah, good things to come.
Yeah, excellent. Well, thank you once again, Kyle Zantos. And check out his podcast because it is fantastic, musicianonmusicians.com. And also, go to iTunes, rate the show. You can also rate our show, the Air Raid Podcast, on there, because that those ratings really do help us out in the long run, helps us, both of us, both of our shows, to continue to get good guests on, and it shows people that, it shows us and guests that people are actually listening. So please, don't forget to do that. You can find our show, of course, at air-raid.net or on the Noisebeam website from the good people at Fisher Broadcasting. Wow, this whiskey is getting on top of my tongue here.
Yeah,
yeah, totally. At air-raid.noisebeam.com. And once again, go to iTunes, do the ratings. We love you for it. We're going to go out today with the song Glory by Brian John Appleby off of the album Fire on the Vine, which you can find at Bandcamp. So, without further ado, this is Glory. This is the end of the Air Raid Podcast, and we will see you next week.